Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the ASN podcast. This is episode 56, and we are coming at you 2 weeks after episode 55 came out, or a little bit later, maybe a couple days after 2 weeks, but whatever it may be, we're back here. We are going to be previewing a couple things here, kind of a light week in terms of what we want to talk about. You know, now that the NFL season is over, there's something, it's like that weird lull where like playoffs are in the foreseeable future, but not really too much to discuss for the most part. But one thing I do want to discuss is how my partner, my co-host, Dan Tracy, is doing. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. February, well, this part of February is a little bit dull in sports. There's not much going on with me either, but that's not a bad thing. So I'm good. How are you? I know you've got a little bit of a break from work.
Yeah, 2 days is a great break. Consecutive days off for the first time in like 5 weeks is nice. I've been working like a dog. You know how New York City likes to overreact to the winter. So that's good for my pockets. I'm living like the Monopoly man lately, but
it's an endless winter, right? I mean, it's colder than cold for me, at least colder than it's usually been this late.
Yeah, I feel like we've been blessed the last couple of years with like very mild winters, even in terms of like temperature, because like snow is whatever at this point. I feel like we don't really get like that much snow anymore. Like when we were kids, like I feel like we would get at least 30 inches of snow throughout the season, throughout the winter season. Like now, I don't even think the last 3 years, I don't even think we broke like 10. So, I mean, but in terms of temperature in New York City, this past winter, I feel like it's been a lot colder consistently. Yeah. Last year, we had like two really, really cold days. Christmas, the 23rd and the 24th of December last or 2 years ago were like unbearable. And this past year, everything's been like consistently cold, but you know, not like zero. But
yeah, it's 34 degrees right now in Arlington, Virginia here. And it's February 25th.
Is that cold? I don't even know like what the temperature's like in like Virginia. Like what, how
it's,
does the
it's temperature usually matter? Just like add 4 or 5 degrees from New York.
Really? I always thought, I mean, maybe it's because, you know.
Well, you know, it's the D.C. area, so it's only like, what, 4.5 hours away?
Yeah.
You know, you go further south, yeah, probably. You know, it gets a little bit warmer, but it's cold. It's cold. I've colder than it feels like it was last year. Hopefully that's not extending your work schedule anymore.
Oh, well, it has, but that's all right.
Like hopefully, I said, hopefully it comes to an end.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take it when they, you know, talked about this off camera, like, you know, when elders give you advice or say something to you that like you just don't want to hear. Like I said it to because I work outside every day. Like I am an exterior worker. I'm always outside. Like my job is 100% in the elements. So, you know, like you get beaten up after a while. Yeah. Like four or five, six straight days of being in like 20 or below, it does a number on you. You know, you get a little chilly and a little dry. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like a raisin half the time. And my dad, who was, you know, he worked outdoors for like 30 plus years, I'll tell him and he's just like, preaching to the choir, my son, you know, don't worry about it. You'll be all right. And I'm like, damn, dude, like, all right. You don't have to make me feel like crap. Yeah. Like, yeah. You did it 28 years more than I did, but pardon me. You know, it is what it is, but yeah, I'm looking forward to the warmer-ish weather. This week is going to be really nice for us in New York. It's going to be like in the 40s and 50s. So hopefully we're climbing out of the 20s. Today is going to be really chilly. I think I was supposed to go golfing today, but it's going to be like 21 degrees. So I don't feel like freezing my ass off on the 13th fairway. Yeah. So
especially when you already do it professionally.
I tell you what, dude, I don't know if we've discussed this in the last couple of episodes, but I really picked up golf as like a hobby, like a very enjoyable hobby. And like, I'm not really that great. Like I could drive the ball really far and my short game is pretty good, but I consistently shoot in triple digits. But I mean, like it's so much fun. Like when you get a bunch of guys to go consistently, like it's a very, very enjoyable experience. And yeah, you shank a few shots, you know, you create some divots in the fairway, whatever it may be, but it's a lot of fun.
Now you're getting into the warmer weather months where you can actually enjoy it.
Yeah, we've been golfing. We went a few times, me and a few buddies, and we call it a wet wedging when we go. So we've been wet wedging a few times in the winter. So we can't wait until it gets to like actually nice weather, because, you know, I hit a ball the other day, or the last time I went, an iron, and I striped it. Like, it was a clean hit, but it was so cold out that like I felt it for like three holes. I was like, my hands are killing me. Like, it was, you know, you hit it nice. You don't even want to hit it clean when it's that cold out, because you know that. And I don't wear gloves. I'm a golf novice. I don't have any of the, my clubs aren't measured to my length. Like, none of that stuff.
Yeah, you're not there yet.
I'm never going to be like that. That's when I play football, I never wear gloves. Baseball, I never play gloves. I'm just not like a glove person. And then like my friends come out with like the customized like Nike gloves, and I'm just like, dude, like, what are we doing here? We're shooting 135. Like, we're not Tiger Woods out here. Come on, let's just hit the ball, drink a beer, and let's go.
Yeah.
But it's fun. Damn, we should go golfing down in Virginia one of these days.
I'll try. I probably will be much worse than you.
You seem like a guy, to be honest with you. Hey, I shot an even 100 the other day. I'm getting a lot better. You seem like a guy that once you pick up golf, you would be really good at it.
I could see myself having the patience for it. At least it's not one of those where you have to rely completely on strength. Because I probably wouldn't do great there.
Wow, you're a beast. What are you talking about? You're an absolute beast.
Accuracy, though, I feel like I could compete with accuracy.
That's all it is, dude. All you get, the old timers will always tell you, you know, I don't hit them far, but I hit them straight.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's what you need to do. And
I'd like to think I could do well in that department.
Yeah, because I used to try and hit the ball. I would step up to the tee and I'd try and fucking Happy Gilmore it. And, you know, I'd try and green it from 420 yards out. And, you know, that's never going to happen. And once I finally learned that it's like, it's okay to have a 250 yard drive or even less than that. It's as long as it's right down the middle. And I didn't realize that until like recently, where I'm like, oh, if I actually use more technique than power, like, I actually play a lot better. So, you know, I'm getting there. Hopefully by the end of the summer, I'll shoot under 100. I'm hoping for like a nice 90. That would be nice. Like 18 over on the car, I wanted to say course and par and car came out. So, yeah, hopefully. I mean, whatever. I don't care. I just like going out there and hitting the ball, because, you know, now in my ripe old age of 27, you know, now I have to pick up these, you know, I'm going to pick up knitting or crocheting, and I'm going to start wearing sweaters in the summer and playing.
Yeah, you're going to do what? Shuffleboard? That's what
shuffleboard's a lot of fun. Don't sleep on shuffleboard.
Oh, no, right? Sorry. You've already picked it up. Okay.
No, I haven't picked it up, but I played it a couple times.
I was at age 26.
And even worse, I picked it up on a cruise ship. So like that.
Well, that makes the most sense, right? Isn't that like, because there's only so many things you could do.
Yeah, but like that's something that is like epitome of old. You know how like old people love cruises, and like playing shuffleboard on a cruise is like one of the oldest things that you could do. Yeah. So that, and like eating cream of wheat at like 5 a.m. You know, all that kind of stuff. All the stereotypical.
Well, you're already getting up at 5 a.m. So all you have to do is add the cream of wheat, and you're there.
I'm well older than my years would indicate. Someone actually, I actually collabed with a YouTuber yesterday on a video, and he asked me, he was like, yeah, dude, he was like, what are you, like 21, 22? I'm like, oh, really? I'm like, that's so nice of you to say. I'm like, no, I'm 27. He's like, damn, you're 27? I'm like, oh. I'm like, it's not that old. Jeez.
you don't know if you're going to take that as a compliment or if you're going to be insulted by how old he thinks 27 is.
Yeah, and he was like, and he's like 23, so it's not even like it's a big age gap. It's not like he was like 17 or something like that. It's a big age gap. So I'm like, dude, you're 23. You're not even that far off. But whatever it may be. Dan, we do have a couple of things that we want to discuss. I think the first thing that we should, because it seems like the most relevant to what has happened, at least overnight, was the Cody Bellinger signing with the Chicago Cubs. I want to talk a little MLB free agency. I know you have a bone to pick with not only – I feel like you have a bone to pick with everyone involved in this scenario, because I feel like I do as well. Over the past few years, I feel like we've seen the bigger free agents in baseball just wait really, really long to sign. Now, whether that is teams reluctant to actually spend the money or agents, you know, refusing contracts or players, whatever it may be, I want to get your take on – like what exactly you're feeling when you see these guys signing this late.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, let's blame Scott Boras, the agent. And he's an easy punching bag, and he's not perfect, but at some point, you know, when a Cy Young winner Blake Snell, is still out there at the end of February. It's more about, like, you know, don't teams want to get better? Like so many teams could benefit from him. And I mean, maybe his contract demands are a little bit high, but there are 30 teams. Like, there's got to be one out there, you know, that is willing to spend some kind of money to have a big rotation upgrade. And, you know, with the reality of it is that there aren't enough teams willing to spend money. I mean, like, I saw, you know, somebody quote tweeted their tweet today from December, talking about Cody Bellinger and, you know, saying like, oh, I'm interested to see where the market goes with, you know, with the I think it was the Giants were out on him, you know, the Blue Jays and Cubs were fits. And they said, you know, the Guardians and the Marlins are perfect fits, but that's not happening. And it's like, well, it's true, that's not happening. But how sad is it that we look at this league and we're like, oh, yeah, well, these two teams, you know, both could contend in some capacity this year. But, you know, there's no shot of them signing this good free agent because they just don't want to spend money. It's a sad state. And so, you know, you get to this point in the offseason where it's like, oh, only a few teams are actually willing to spend that kind of money. And most of them already have. Like, you know, the Yankees have already spent money, partially by trading, you know, by trade, but that still is bringing in a big salary. You know, the Dodgers.
Yeah, the arbitration money they have, they spent was like $30 million, right?
Yeah, Juan Soto set like an arbitration record. I forget it. Something like $34-35 million. Deserves every penny of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's that. And, you know, the Giants, they spent money on Jung-Hoo Lee from Korea and Jorge Soler. It's like, all right, well, they're out. You know, they're not signing anybody else.
Yo, what, did I see that right? I think it was you that posted it, actually. So it's definitely right if you posted it. That the Giants haven't had like a 30 home run hitter since Barry Bonds.
They have not had a 30 home run hitter since Barry Bonds. They've also had a different left fielder on opening day every year since Barry Bonds.
What was it? Last year was like Mitch Haniger, right?
Or something. I think last year was Blake Sable. And I remember that because I remember they played the Yankees and I was like, who is this? Like, you know me, like, I know these guys. I'm like, who is Blake Sable? And he had an okay rookie year for them. But you know, it's been, I think it's somebody different every year since Barry Bonds, because he was the last one that went back to back. And he was the last 30 home run hitter.
That's sick.
Maybe that'll change this year with Jorge Soler. Or maybe the baseball gods will, you know, give him like a hamstring injury for a month and he'll finish with like 28 just to keep that streak alive.
That's got
to
be, especially in today's baseball. And I know that like they play 81 of their games at, what is it called? I can't even keep, what is it, Oracle Park or whatever? Yeah. The name's changed.
It's actually one of the better name changes. For some reason, Oracle sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it does. So like, I know they play 81 of their games at Oracle Park, but like, in today's baseball game,
you also play Coors Field a few times a year.
Yeah, but like, you prioritize home runs. Like, you're playing 9 games at Coors Field. Right there, you should have like 9 home runs right off the bat off that. But like, it's so funny to me how that's got to be one of the more surprising stats in like modern day baseball.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, and they've won three World Series too in that time span.
Which is hilarious. You would think that they'd be like the worst team in the MLB since then. And they had like a full-blown dynasty at one point of like 3 World Series in 5 years.
Like, yeah, you know, it's bizarre. But they've tried. I mean, look, they apparently offered more, or they offered as much for Aaron Judge as the Yankees did. I think it was the Padres who offered more.
Arson Judge.
You know, they've made an effort, but they tried for Otani. They tried for Carlos Correa. They almost had Carlos Correa. So they've tried, but they've come up short. Maybe Jorge Soler will
break that. Let me ask you a question. So would this be a problem for you? Say like we get maybe a week, 10 days from now, Blake Snell signs and he signs with the Dodgers. Say like that for like market value, not like a discounted price. Mm-hmm. Be like, hey, look, Blake, look at what we got going on here. You know, we got a great team. We want to add you. We can't pay you as much, but like, you're going to win multiple World Series, or like in Dodger lore, you know, they're going to win 122 games and get swept in the NLDS. But you know what I mean? Like, what would you feel about that? Would that kind of be like the straw that broke the camel's back if it's like, all right, like now this is crazy, because you basically have, at this point in baseball, it seems like you have about 6 teams that are willing to spend money and about 24 teams that are kind of willing to go dumpster diving or like in the clearance bin, if you will.
Yeah, because at that point, if you took a look at, you know, the top free or the top players that changed hands this offseason, went somewhere new, I mean, it would be like Dodgers, Yankees, Dodgers, Dodgers, Orioles, you know, with Corbin Burns.
Love that, by the way.
Which I do love that. And they need him too, because now they've got some pitching injuries already. But, you know, it's like, yes, at some point, you know, I don't care who you blame, because, you know, if you say like, oh, this is bad for baseball, people are like, well, why is the Dodgers spending money and wanting to get better bad for baseball? It's like, but no, it's not that.
Yeah.
It's not them that's the problem, even as much as I don't like them. Like, you know, it's everybody else. Like, it doesn't matter who you blame. Like, we can't sit here and say, oh, there's no problem here. Like, yes, there is a problem. I don't care what you think the solution is, but there's an issue there. But, you know, the only saving grace is that baseball is kind of like a great equalizer, because once the games start, you know, it's almost like they don't care who's on the team. You know, guys get hurt, guys break out, guys decline out of nowhere. So, you know, at a certain point, like, you can only do so much to guarantee, you know, some wins. You know, I guess the Rangers, you know, like the Rangers were fortunate. They ended up signing so many guys that it was just like, oh, we're deep enough to survive those injuries. Like, you know, DeGrom got hurt. Scherzer was hurt half the time after they had him. You know, but they signed so many guys that they had depth. And that's kind of what the Dodgers are getting to now. That, like, well, maybe, you know, even if they do have some injuries, unless it's to, you know, Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman, you know, they've got the depth to survive it. But for a lot of teams, you know, you can add and add and add. And it doesn't guarantee anything, because that's just the way the sport is set up. It's different than, like, you know, if there was an NBA version of the Dodgers, like, which there was when the Warriors were at their peak, you know, they're going to win every year. Like, you know, maybe 3 out of 4 years they're going to win. At least in baseball, it's a little bit different. But, you know, let's hope Blake Snell doesn't end up with the Dodgers.
I'm just saying, because it seems like I agree with you 100% to the point where it's like, me and you would be, we would see that notification on our phone and roll our eyes and go, oh my God, you know what I mean? But, like, I can't blame them. I'm not going to be mad at the Dodgers for being like, hey, no one's offering for you. Like, we'll give you 30 million.
It's the whole system that would be the issue.
You know, like,
as much as I want to blame them.
Hey, you can't blame them, because, like, at the end of the day, even if they have like a $500 million payroll, like, it's going to be, you know, they want to get better. They want to contend for a World Series. And, you know, a lot of people say the Dodgers are like the modern day Yankees, where A, that's not true, because the Dodgers won a Mickey Mouse World Series in 2020. Haven't won since, didn't win before that after having multiple 100 win seasons as well. But a lot of their players are also homegrown. You don't realize a lot of their impact players are homegrown. Sure, they have the Freddie Freemans, Mookie Betts. They have a good pitching staff, good relievers. But, you know, I hate that notion of, a team signs like one or two expensive free agents and it's like, oh, there you go, buying championships again. Yeah. And it's like, you do realize that like 15 or 16 of those players are homegrown players on that roster. Like, it's not, they're not signing 10, $300 million contracts out there. Like, it, you know, it is different. I feel like it's so hard to build a super team in, like, this is the closest that we've ever seen probably to a super team in baseball, what the Dodgers have right now. It's so difficult to do
something like that. Because they have, you know, they have shorter lifespans in their, you know, in their careers. Like, and it's, you know, it's not the case for everybody, but a lot of, you know, it's easier to break down because of injuries. I mean, like in the NBA, you know, if you sign a 30-year-old star, he's going to be good for at least a few more years. Like, he's going to be at that level. You know it. You know, the only way is if he actually misses like half of every year. Like, even Kawhi Leonard, like, missed, you know, how many injuries has he had with the knee, and he's missed so much time. And he's, you know, he's not going to win MVP, but he's probably sixth or seventh in voting this year, or fifth, you know, at best. Like, he's come back and he's been like, he hasn't missed any time. That's how it is in basketball, usually. In baseball, you know, like, if Ohtani, if his body broke down this year, like, it's believable that he may never be the same again. You know, it's just the way that, like, the way that these careers happen, like the Freddie Freemans of the world, who are, you know, playing at an MVP level into, you know, their mid 30s, are the exception, not the rule. So, you know, that's why, like, you know, how many guys do the Yankees sign that doesn't work out?
Yeah.
Or, you know, any of these teams. I mean, look at the Red Sox. They had that great offseason where they had like Pablo Sandoval and Hanley Ramirez coming on the same day, and neither of them did anything. I mean, Hanley Ramirez had one decent year when they won I think they won the division in 2016. And that was it from the two of them. So it's just, it's so much harder to count on these guys
Yeah.
Like when the Padres signed Xander Bogaerts for 11 years, like, well, you know, this is somebody who's already been in the league for a decade.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how much longer he's going to be able to sustain this. And I still think that's a valid question.
I mean, the contracts that the Padres handed out, they've dug themselves, like, now we could officially say, I believe, you know, they traded Juan Soto, they signed some of these guys to 10-plus year contracts. I think it's safe to say that. Remember last year we were talking about this has to be the year for the Padres, like, they have to contend for a World Series, and they didn't even come close. I think we could say that it's officially the closing of the window of a massive failure, for me at least.
Well, they're in a sad, I mean, they were the kind of team you want, though, when we talk about the Dodgers. Like, you know, they're the kind of team that that actually overcame, you know, those limitations and spent money. And the sad part of it is, you know, that they finally found an owner who wanted to spend money. He took over, I think, at the end of 2020. And then he died. He died in this past October. And so now, you know, they're shedding payroll again. And so they're not keeping Juan Soto, who ordinarily, you know, any team would want to keep. You know, the Blake Snell is still a free agent. They're not even making an effort to re-sign him. So, you know, they're still paying Tatis and Bogaerts and Manny Machado. But, you know, the question is, at some point, maybe not Tatis, but the other two, at some point, are those deals just going to hold them back? You know, instead of actually allowing them to put a good field on the team, a good team on the field. I mean, Manny Machado just signed a 10-year, $350 million extension last year. He's going to be around for a long time. So they better hope he continues to play well, because, you know, if not, I have a feeling they're just going to use that deal as an excuse not to go out and spend anything.
Yeah, I just, you know, I feel like every year, I feel like such an old baseball fan, because every year there's something that comes up that I have to complain about. And I hate doing that because it's a sport that I love the most, even though I literally have a YouTube channel based on content completely on a different sport. But, like, I don't know, this free agency thing the last few years is really bumming me out, where it's like, I used to remember, and I'm sure that you remember this too, where, like, in the early 2010s, and like 2009 being the most recent, or 2008 offseason really being the most memorable for me, where, like, most of these big free agents, the signings were done and dusted by the end of the winter meetings. Like, these guys were signed before the new year for the most part, which is crazy.
You know, that happened last year. Like, there really wasn't much going on after New Year's last year. So so much of it just depends on the year. Like, we talked before we came on, in 2019, Manny Machado signed like in mid-February after Valentine's Day, and Bryce Harper signed on February 28th. Like, you know, those were two guys, like, they were a whole level above Blake Snell and Cody Bellinger. Like, those are two, you know, Hall of Fame talents in their prime. And they didn't sign until February 19th to February 28th. And that was also a year where the season started. I think the season started like the same day it does this year. You know, that was, I think, the lowest it's gotten. Like, I think that was worse than this, is that, you know, when Bryce Harper's out there and, you know, like, you're struggling to get a team to match that asking price. I mean, everybody should want Bryce Harper.
Yeah.
You know, like in the NBA, if, you know, Luka Doncic became a free agent tomorrow, all 30 teams would want to sign him. I think all 30 teams would not know. I think a bunch of them would know it's not realistic. Like, he's not joining the Hornets, but they would all clear room for him. Part of it is that the NBA limits contracts, and you know the max deal is only so much. It's only a certain percentage of the cap, and the MLB Players Association would never allow that. But, you know, it's a different dynamic. But I think that was the lowest point when, you know, Bryce Harper and Manny Machado were out there, and, you know, you almost had to beg teams to pay them something.
Yeah.
You know, like, at least Cody Bellinger, you could justify, like, well, you know, he was terrible for 3 years and we don't want to put him in the wrong situation. At least the Cubs know he's had success there. And, you know, Blake Snell, I mean, part of me could justify it with, like, well, those two Cy Young years are kind of anomalies, and he walks a lot of guys.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, you know, every team needs pitching. Like, every team needs pitching. I don't care if it's just for the sake of having depth. Like, that's why the Rangers just kept adding guys and adding guys. Because, like, every, you know, guys are going to get hurt. And they did. And they still won a World Series because they kept adding guys. You know, at least you could justify it in that way. So I think the Machado and Harper offseason was terrible. But, you know, then like the next year, Gerrit Cole, Anthony Rendon, Steven Strasburg, Zach Wheeler are the top free agents. And they're all signed by the winter meetings. Every single one of them was signed by the end of the winter meetings.
You know, I feel like also this year we kind of got away from it a little bit because there weren't that many amazing free agent. You know what I mean? Like it was more, I feel like a lot more star power got moved like via trade and stuff like that. I just think that like the guys that were available themselves only besides for maybe the top five or six didn't really move the needle for me as much. But yeah, that was another thing I wanted to talk about just briefly was, I mean, how much of a disaster the Anthony Rendon contract is. And I got to be honest with you, like, I know one thing that caused waves earlier this week was when he said that, you know, baseball is a job, like my family and my faith come before baseball. Like I pretty much agree with that. Like that is something that like, that's very like understandable. But the fact that he's basically like, he kind of just like, yeah, I don't feel like playing today. And then just like, doesn't play.
That's the thing is like his effort level reflects that. Like people are like, what's the difference between him, you know, and Nikola Jokic, you know, who says the same thing. The difference is Nikola Jokic puts in the work. Like you know, he'll be in America for 9 months, you know, playing his heart out. It may not look like it because he's huge. You know, he's a slow guy. That's not going to change, but he's plays his heart out for 9 months, you know. And so I think his version of a job is something you work very hard at. Like, you know, that he's got a work ethic.
Anthony Rendon's version of a job is like, that's the thing too. Like, I feel like Rendon, I mean, don't get me wrong, Rendon, when he was on the Nationals, was a great player.
Yeah.
But like,
but then he got paid.
No MVPs. You know what I mean? Like, don't even compare. That's crazy to compare. Like, Nikola Jokic doesn't, I feel like he cares about basketball. He doesn't care about the fanfare of basketball.
Right. Yeah. I saw people saying that because some people were like, oh, you know, he doesn't care about basketball. And somebody's like, he does. It's the attention that comes along.
Yeah.
Like, he'd probably be a little bit more comfortable averaging like, you know, 9-7 as a role player. I mean, it's just, you know, as much, although I think he loves being great at what he does, you know, like he'd probably be a little more comfortable with the lack of fanfare that comes with being, you know,
that's,
the average
Joe. Saying. If, see, like, I feel like a good comparison for like Nikola Jokic in terms of a player would be Mike Trout, because Mike Trout is so great. And so is Nikola Jokic. They're just not in love with the fanfare. Like, Mike Trout's a very quiet. We've talked about this before where I feel like Mike Trout just completely, like, him being a nice guy has honestly sort of kind of ruined his career up until this point, in my opinion, to the point where it's like, you know, you're stuck on this terrible team and you're never going to win a World Series. But, like,
you're taking some very anti-Mike Trout stances on this podcast.
No. It's not that. No, I'm not saying I love Mike Trout. I think he's one of, if not the best baseball players, pure talent wise of all time. I'm saying that like his niceness has kind of ruined his reputation to this point of being like a bigger player than he should be. I think that Mike Trout's going to be the best player in baseball history to never win a World Series at this point. But what I'm saying is trying to compare the two, because like Jokic is someone, multiple time MVP, a champion, someone that, you know, is a fantastic player, but just off the court, you don't really hear too much about. Same thing with Mike Trout. Like, Mike Trout just lives his life. I think to compare Nikola Jokic and Anthony Rendon is such a disservice to Nikola Jokic, because he does put the time in. He does put the work in. He just doesn't want to be bothered when he's not playing basketball. And Rendon is someone that seems to be bothered during baseball season.
Right. Yeah. Like, you know, like Nikola Jokic, when he plays, you don't get the sense of he doesn't want to be here. Not with anything, not with the body language, you know, not with his level of play, his effort. But with Rendon, you know, that's the sense you get. It's like, this is a guy who doesn't want to be here and he's collecting his paycheck. So, yeah, I completely agree with you. That was it. You know, the people who are making those comparisons either they don't really see how Nikola Jokic actually carries himself, you know, or they're just looking to start something that isn't there. But I think that pretty much covers it. I think, you know, I have to say that the one free agent that almost makes me upset that he's still a free agent is Jordan Montgomery, because Jordan Montgomery is everything you'd want in a pitcher. Now, I don't know what he's asking for, but, you know, he was a guy who went out. First of all, he's never really been hurt. Well, okay, he had Tommy John surgery a few years ago. Ever since then, has not been hurt. And then, you know, he goes out on the mound for the Rangers in the postseason, and, you know, he's excellent. Like, you know, not only is he excellent, but he's giving you seven innings in an era where nobody gives you seven innings. He had one rough start against the Orioles. And then, every, you know, between that, you know, between the Rays series and everything else, he was great. You know, he's a workhorse. I don't understand. He's like 29 or 30. I don't know why you wouldn't spend money like on a player like him. And I know Red Sox fans are like, oh, he would be the perfect fit here. And now apparently the Red Sox are one of those teams now that, like, you know, spends like they're the Rays and has a, you know, a small payroll every year, because why not?
I think they're just trying to get a lot of, like, I think I went over that. I thought about that. And I said, I was like, man, the Red Sox used to be that big time player. Now they're dumpster diving for, like, relief pitchers, you know, and that's like their big signing. But I read an article where they were saying that they're trying to get under a certain threshold for, like, the next couple of years, then they'll spend money again. Like,
yeah, I don't know. Every year they're saying it's a new line. Like, you know, oh, we're going to be in it this year. I think their owner said that, like, oh, you know, we're going to be major players in the offseason. And they come away with, like, Lucas Giolito. You know, if I was a Red Sox fan, I'd be furious. I'm not, because I'm not a Red Sox fan.
Yeah. I mean, this is great for us.
But I do know that city loves the Red Sox.
Yeah.
And it's sad that they almost, I'd almost rather them rebuild if I were a Red Sox fan. Like, you know, tear the whole thing down, keep Devers. I don't care. He's, you know, he's in his mid-20s. Keep him, he could be part of a rebuild, but tear the whole rest of the thing down. We've got a few guys to build around and we need more. Instead, it's almost like they don't care. Like, they're just like, yeah, you know, 83 wins is, like, you know, that's fine. And we'll go from there. We'll figure it out next offseason.
Like, yeah, they're in this, like, perpetual.
Yes, like, they're indifferent about it. It seems like either that, or they think when they went to the ALCS in 2021 that, like, oh, we're going to get back there. It's just been a couple down years. I don't know. Like, they didn't let Chaim Bloom, who was the president before, you know, who was fired in September, they didn't really let him spend. And then they're like, oh, why aren't we winning? Like, you know, there's only so much you can do when you're given that kind of budget.
Yeah, it's speaking of budget, I'm glad that you mentioned that. I want to kind of switch gears and talk a little bit about the NFL. But
smooth segue.
Budget, the $30-plus million spike in the salary cap, unbelievable.
Yeah. I look back when I started on Instagram, it was 120 million salary cap. It's 255 now. So it's more than doubled. Wow. Which is just, I mean, for, you know, 12 years is crazy.
But I mean, this is great for some of these, see, like, for us as Jet, not that it's really going to turn into anything, but as Jet fans, so say this, say, like, before the league year ends, and before restructuring and all that kind of stuff, trades, the Jets only have almost $2 million in cap space. Now, you know, that's a huge, see, like, I think what the NFL is trying to do, like, very subtly, but we all see right through it because it's not so subtle, is just, I mean, the $30 million is huge. What was it last year? The spike was what? Like, wasn't it like 3 or 4 million? It was something smaller, right?
I don't even remember what it was.
It was something not even comparable to this year. So what I think they're trying to do is they're just trying to enable some of these teams to spend more. And you know what? I love the salary cap because the proof is in the pudding in the NFL, where if you put a cap on salary on what teams can spend and you do league-wide revenue sharing, you have no idea where these guys are going to go. You know what I mean? Like, you could see, like, a big-time player go to Tampa. I'm not saying no disrespect to the organizations. I'm just trying to say, like, maybe not the most marketable or the most media, like, central teams. You know, you could see a guy go to Arizona. You could see a guy go to Jacksonville.
There were a few years where, like, the Jaguars were, like, the most active team every year in free agency.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, you know, I love.
This is also a league where free agency does not make your team good because, you know, it's more about, like, adding around the edges. Yeah. You know, and the Jaguars were not in a position to do that back then. But
we've seen it before when the Jets tried to build through the free agency with Mike Maccagnan, how detrimental it is to a short term, to the short term and long term of the team. Because if you don't have the foundation of a team, the foundation and the first floor of a team, should be through the draft, through rookie contracts and young players. And then, like you said, around the edges or the guys that'll take you over the top are the guys that you're willing to spend money on. See, that's not – see, the Jaguars had a nice young nucleus of players, but it wasn't enough. And then they were adding a ridiculous amount of players through expensive contracts. And then you screw yourself for a few years. But now it looks like they're in prime position to spend again.
Right.
But that's what I like. I like that there are teams. I mean, the Bears have like $112 million in cap space.
Bengals have a lot. You know, people were like, people spent, I know it's going to change because Joe Burrow's cap number is $20 million higher in 2025.
Yeah, but also you have to consider, we're looking at the cap space now.
Right.
You also have to consider when the league year starts, it's always going to go up.
Isn't it so funny that people were like, oh, yeah, they got it. They got to choose between Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, and they may have to choose, you know, they got to pick which defensive players to re-sign. And, and they did let a couple go. You know, Jesse Bates and Von Bell left, and they went younger in the secondary. But it's like, you know, there are not many teams in better position than they are right now. Yeah. You know, and like even like Joe Mixon, somebody they could easily like get rid of his salary, and it wouldn't really matter. You know, so they're all of a sudden they have more cap space than any of those contenders because everybody else above them is not I think they finished. I think the top four teams in cap space finished with 6 wins or less last year. Yeah. Titans, Commanders, Patriots, Bears, not in order. But or the Bears at 7. But
it also enables someone like the Bengals, like you said, because now they have. So this is like the perfect recipe for me. Now you have a young nucleus of tremendous football players. If you want, you could extend T. Higgins long term with the amount of money you have. You could also extend Ja'Marr Chase long term in the same offseason because of how much money you have. This is the time to do it because obviously over the next few years, if they re-sign, you know, the Burrow contract gets more expensive. You know, they're also going to have to find a replacement for DJ Reader this year, but that's $15 million off the books right there.
Right.
So you know what I'm saying? Like you could spend all this money on these three guys that are basically like, you know, the nucleus of your offense, but also build. See, they have enough young, like Logan Wilson is on a somewhat kind of expensive contract. Jermaine Pratt is also on an expensive contract. They're going to have to extend Cam Taylor-Britt at some point he's not like a superstar. He's a great, great young player, but that's someone that you'd want to keep around in the secondary. It's such like cornerback, line, offensive line, wide receiver is such, you know, volatile positions where you could just never have too much talent. And why would you want to give up your own young talent to find someone that never made sense to me? It's almost like the Bears, like if they let Jalen Johnson go in free agency and then just replace him with another young corner. It's like you have a young, fantastic top five corner. Why don't you build upon that? They have Jalen Johnson. They have Tyreek Stevenson. Get someone else too to add. Kind of like, hit crazy to say, but like kind of like what the Jets did, where it's like you have a three-headed monster at corner of, you know, Sauce Gardner, DJ Reed, Michael Carter II, and they're all young and they're all so controllable at this point. DJ Reed, not so much. He's going to command a pretty big extension, but like you got to give it to him. And this enables the Jets to do something like that, where DJ Reed's coming up on the last year of his contract. Like if they want to extend him now, they can because of the extra $30 million in cap room. Like, that's what I'm saying. I love the initiative, even though it's not so subtle where they want these teams to spend. Like, it's nice to see because teams, like fans of teams that didn't have a lot of cap space, now there's so much more wiggle room where I don't have to see my favorite player walk. Like, I'm sure guys in Tampa Bay don't want to see Mike Evans leave in free agency. Mm-hmm. Now with that extra $30 million, they can give him what he wants if they really want to keep him around. You know what I mean? So it's
the other side of that is other teams now have more money to work with if somebody gets to free agency.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So like it's nice.
They're getting paid. The players are winning.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But we're also getting to this crazy point where like edge rushers are getting like Brian Burns wants like $30 million a year. Don't get me wrong. Brian Burns is a great young edge rusher, but the production has not been there to warrant. I wouldn't, to be quite honest with you, I wouldn't even pay Brian Burns $20 million a year. I would rather pay someone like Bryce Huff. You know what I mean? Like someone that has the statistics that's only going to get better as his snap count goes up. So like some of these guys are getting a little brazen with their contract demands. But, you know, it's great to see. I love it. That's why, like, you know, the NFL, Roger Goodell gets a lot of shit for some stuff that he does. But like, gotta be honest with you, man. I really think he's a great commissioner.
I mean, the league has blown up.
yeah.
since he became commissioner. That, you know, people still get on him because, like, you know, they didn't like how long Ray Rice was suspended 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, okay. It was, you know, now, you know, that was 2014. Like, they're like, when the salary cap was half of what it is now. Like, the NFL has blown up since then. You know, so they're obviously doing plenty of things right. I mean, his tenure is going to be looked back at as something of a, you know, a big success. Very positive. Even if some people don't like him. But I haven't heard as much criticism of him the last few years, and I think it's for that reason.
No, and I love the I love how the tradition of, like, him just getting booed at the NFL drafts is just, like, a thing. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's like a commissioner thing.
Yeah, I don't think, like, 80% of those people actually dislike Roger Goodell. It's just, like, so funny. And he, like, really plays into it now. Like, this is the – like, I remember last year he got, like, a real kick out of it. Like, he – you know, as he was walking out, he was like pumping up the crowd, like, I want to hear more, you know, like, I like that kind of stuff. And I really think that, you know, the contracts are getting crazy, but also the revenue is crazy. The NFL is king in America. The NFL is king in America. They are expanding to the UK. You know what I mean? They're Germany, Mexico. Now we're going to see a Brazil game as well. Like, the NFL is rolling in cash. Like, honestly, let's be real, Dan. If they really wanted to, I'm sure that they could bump up the salary cap to like $400 million if they wanted to. Like, this offseason alone, like, they probably could do it.
Yeah.
If they want.
Well, I think what they do is it's 48% of the total revenue. I think that's what they keep it at.
Which is crazy. Because there's teams like the Chiefs. Like, how much money do you think the Chiefs made last year?
Like, oh yeah, I can't imagine.
You know, like easily in the billions, you know, like it's insane.
Yeah, it's like 40% of the total league revenue, and then they split it, you know, among the 32 teams. And then I think it's but there's also a portion of that goes to, like, player benefits. So I think they said what, like, every team's getting $74 million of player benefits, which is, like, you know, let's add that up, you know, it's in the billions. Just benefits alone. So
I love that. Like, the NFL really does have, like, don't get me wrong, player safety could always be improved upon in terms of now. But, like, what they have set up for veterans and all that kind of stuff and retirement and everything, I mean, I think it's a great system. I really do. I mean, that could be just a surface level. Maybe if I look deeper into it, maybe it's a lot more shitty than I think. But on the surface level, it seems like just a great system. And NFL's really got, like, this is obviously goes without saying, the NFL has something spectacular going on. And it seems like it's only going to get better as time goes on, which is something really exciting. So maybe, Dan, by episode 500 of the ASN podcast, the NFL salary cap will be at like $500 million or something like that.
Yeah, it's going to be a billion. Jets will have a billion to spend.
And spend, you know, $300 million on David Bakhtiari.
Then they're going to sign a running back.
Jets fans on Twitter or something else, man. And it really cracked me up because the first thing I saw the first tweet from Adam Schefter, and he said the salary cap has gone up to whatever it was, 200 and, like you said, what was it, 255 or something like that?
Yeah, 255.
Yeah, and the first thing that was underneath that tweet was a Jet fan going, great. Now we definitely have enough money to spend on David Bakhtiari playing two games for us next year. And I was like, gotta love it.
Yeah, no. And I saw, yeah, Jets fans were like having this heavy debate about, like, signing Donovan Smith because he said he wants to play in New York. Like, listen, we've got to aim higher. Like, we've got to, maybe as like a nice, you know, a swing tackle where he can play, you know, left.
I gotta be honest with you though, dude. Like, I'll take anyone at this. Like, my
it's an upgrade, but, like, there's got to be something. I've got a feeling though that we're drafting a tackle because now it seems like the stocks have risen for. Please help me if I'm pronouncing this wrong. You know, the Oregon State tackle Talisi Fuaga. J.C. Latham's gotten a ton of buzz, so it seems like there's going to be someone available that's worth taking.
My favorite, if I was the GM of the Jets, realistically, this is what my offensive line would look like. So unfortunately, I'll start with the bad news. I'd probably want to keep Laken Tomlinson around. Maybe. That one might be my only, like, I just feel like maybe in free agency and through the draft, I don't really think by the time that the Jets are probably going to be looking for another guard, I don't think there's anyone really worth. I don't. Let's put it this way. I don't think anyone would be better than Laken Tomlinson mm-hmm. at that point in the draft. So, my priority in free agency would be signing Michael Onwenu. That would be my priority. Like that's a guy in his mid-20s who's had a PFF grade over 80 the last 3 years. Like, granted, it was at guard, but he was fantastic at right tackle last year. He has the size and the length to play left tackle. I'd stick him at left tackle. I'd put ABT at right guard, Joe Tippmann at center, Laken Tomlinson at left guard, and I'd have Talisi Fuaga as my number 10 overall pick at right tackle. That would be my ideal offensive line for the Jets.
I'll take it. I mean, it seems to me like the draft is going to be where they – I know that you can't start to address it in the draft because it's in April. But it seems like that's, you know, where they're going to hope to find some kind of franchise tackle. And hopefully Talisi by Fuaga that point, that that's guy, enough. I would like to see them. Guy. Who?
Talisi Fuaga is that guy.
I've heard good things.
Listen, I'll tell you what. I'll send you my scouting report on Talisi Fuaga. You could take a look at it. He's tremendous. He really is. Like, he's 6'6", 334, but he moves around like he's like an outside linebacker. Like, he's crazy athletic, and he's never started an actual game in his collegiate career at guard, but he just has like the nasty demeanor with the athleticism and the speed to play guard if needed. Like, I feel like if a team really just wanted to, it's like the Seahawks for me would be a team that's really interesting for Talisi Fuaga, because if he were to fall that far, I highly doubt it. But like, imagine having Charles Cross and then Abe Lucas. Abe Lucas is someone that unfortunately might have to retire in the near future because of his injury history. Like, you had Talisi Fuaga in there who could play left guard or right guard. And then if Abe Lucas unfortunately has to medically retire, then you could just kick him out to right tackle. You know what I mean? It makes sense. So there's just so much to love about him as a player. And like, I'll send it to you. His tape is pretty shocking in terms of like, wow, that's an athletic guy. And like, I feel like he can't not succeed in the NFL, which is exciting to see in a player.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, they're in a good situation where, you know, there are four, you know, four offensive linemen who are probably going to be top 15 picks.
Yeah, easily.
And legitimate top 15 picks. You know, it's not because it's a weak draft or anything like that. You know, so picking 10th, pretty solid. I know I said earlier in the offseason, before the season ended, because that was the offseason for the Jets, you know, that it would be nice to end up in a position to take, you know, a high-end receiver, whether that's Marvin Harrison Jr., Romo Dunze. That won't be happening. I'd still love to get another receiver, so Garrett Wilson doesn't have to do it all himself. You know, we'll see how that turns out.
Yeah, I just can't. I can't like, as much as I would in an ideal world, I'd love to have like Brock Bowers or Romo Dunze at number 10. But like, we just have to be smart about this because.
Yeah. I mean, it starts with the offensive line.
Yeah.
You look at every team that was still playing, you know, at the end of the year, you can do this any year. And it's usually the offensive line. There are exceptions. You know, the Bengals got to the Super Bowl with like a joke of an offensive line. It's still hilarious to me that like three of those guys on the Bengals Super Bowl offensive line like never started another game. But you know, those are exceptions. Like, and then, you know, like the 49ers, a little bit questionable offensive line aside from Trent Williams. But you know, like the Chiefs offensive line is tremendous. And the Ravens had a great offensive line. And we all know the Lions wouldn't be in this situation. I know people love to, you know, listen, I love Jared Goff too. I love Amon-Ra St. Brown. The running backs, Dan Campbell, everybody, great. The offensive line is the backbone of that team. They set out to build that team from the trenches up, and the offensive line has set the tone for that team. You need something on the offensive line.
I've been saying it ever since. I guess this would be like 4 years on now since I really started to like evaluate players. And there's one thing that I love to do, and I love to evaluate offensive line. Like, it is so much fun. For me, this is going to sound so old school. There is nothing better than turning on a prospect's tape and seeing him absolutely flattening a defender into the ground. Like, that is like the best thing that you could look at. But it's so true. Like, I don't get where some of these people come across and they're like, no, like, you know, we need more receivers. And yeah, it's true, you do. But like, good, make no mistake about it. Unless a team is really strapped for cash and they can't spend, good offensive linemen don't hit free agency.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You're not gonna, my favorite thing with Jets fans is like, oh, we're gonna build this entire offensive line through free agency. And it's like, you might get one good free agent if you're lucky.
Yeah, because, so, you know, then you end up with, like, you know, getting excited about Laken Tomlinson and Connor McGovern, and you're like, this is going to be the best thing.
Hey, you know, McGovern actually played pretty respectable.
Yes, but you know, those are the top guys you find, though. Like, you find respectable guys. You don't find franchise players, you know, unless they have a, you know, a breakout after they sign. You know, which is kind of like, you know, like the Bucks did well, like adding, you know, somebody like Ryan Jensen, who had, you know, he started 1 year with the Ravens, and, you know, and then he kept developing, and they developed him into a top flight center. But at the same time, you know, the rest of the offensive line was built from the ground up. Donovan Smith was drafted. Tristan Wirfs was drafted. You know, Alex Kappa was, I think he was like a late round pick. You know, you've got to be able to draft and develop these guys instead of relying on free agency.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's like people don't understand that when, see, like last year, I'll even admit I was on that train where I was like, Joe Douglas has to do a better job of building the offensive line.
I mean, the truth is, though, like, the Jets' offensive line was so bad that it actually would have benefited them to add anybody in free agency.
Yeah,
you know, like, somebody who has a pulse would have been nice. But, like, the Jets have to aim above that this year.
No, you have to. I'm telling you, there are some guys available that really can make a difference. And I feel like that has to be, if the Jets were to spend money on one player, like, or one position, I'd say, I would just want it to be offensive line. I don't even care where on the offensive line, preferably not center, because we have one of those already. Surprised that's the only thing that we have is a center. And I mean, AVT is a great player, but, you know, he just can't stay on the field.
Yeah, he's got to stay. He's got to stay healthy.
If he's healthy, that's a fantastic young duo of, you know, Tippmann and AVT. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, every year for the past couple seasons, it's been, wow, he's got off to a great start. Too bad he only played 3 games and now he's out for the rest of the year. Like, you know what I mean? Can't bank on that.
Yeah,
and don't even get me started. There are some people that want, they're like, oh, well, the offensive line is so bad, we have to bring back Mekhi Becton, even as a swing tackle. I don't want that man anywhere near MetLife Stadium ever again. Unless he's coming as a opposing player, or he got hired as a peanut vendor. That's the only thing I want to see him as.
It'd be hard to miss him as a peanut vendor. Sometimes the fit is just not right. That's an example of where, like, okay, it's time to move on. No matter what you need, you know, this is clearly not the right fit. But it's going to be interesting in April. It does feel like that's how it's going to settle. Like, you know, whichever tackle or tackles is available, is where they're going to end up. And luckily there should be a lot of, you know, 3 quarterbacks, at least, I think, going before the Jets. Marvin Harrison Jr. will be taken before the Jets. Probably another receiver, you know, whether that's Odunze or Malik Nabers. So they're going to be in a position where they're going to be able to land a pretty promising tackle. I think, you know, Joe Tippmann is an example of, like, that's why it shouldn't stop there. Like, you know, the Jets should add depth on the offensive line in the later rounds, even if they're guys who you're not counting on starting. You know, at least somebody you can draft and develop and have at the ready. You know, if those injuries do hit, I think they should spend multiple picks on the offensive line.
Yeah.
You know, and just see, you know, even if they're not guaranteed to hit at all, you know, maybe you'll get one in the later rounds.
Yeah. I mean, I could sit here and talk about this all day because this is what I love. And well, actually,
we wouldn't want to do that, right?
The content creator that I did a video with yesterday, he's a big offensive line guy too. And it's funny, the video actually turned out to only be, after editing, it only turned out to be a little bit less than 11 minutes long, but the raw footage, good thing I woke up at 5:30 in the morning to, you know, to get that started. Yeah. The raw footage was like an hour and 17 minutes long because we were just talking about the Senior Bowl and like, you know, all that kind of stuff. Next year, I feel like it would be real fun. You're not that far away from Alabama, right?
I'm pretty far from Alabama.
You're not that, you're closer than I am.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything.
But I mean, you could fly there, you know. Like,
yeah, anybody can fly there.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, you should come with me to the Senior Bowl next year. We should do a live ASN podcast from the Senior Bowl.
You would do very well at the Senior Bowl. You should definitely make that a goal.
I got my credentials for this year. I couldn't swing the time from work.
Right.
They didn't. I actually got invited. I was like so honored. I remember exactly what was happening. We were watching Camp Rock 2 on the couch. Great movie.
Not one, two.
Number two, got to be detailed. We were watching Camp Rock 2, and my phone lit up, and I got an email. And usually, I feel like whenever I get an email past like 9 o'clock at night, it's never anything good. It's like some kind of like sex bot offering me like some kind of, you know, OnlyFans or something like that, something terrible. But I saw, and it was from this woman's name came up. And I was like, what the hell? So I looked at it and it said, oh, you know, your press credentials for the Senior Bowl have been approved. And I'm like, whoa, I'm like, this is crazy. But I also got the email super late. They sent me the credentials like 3 weeks before the Senior Bowl started. So I was like, can't really swing the time. We're also not supposed to. We have to have our vacation in by the second week of February. And you're not really supposed to take any of the vacation before you have it in. So I was like, that kind of sucks. So I had to bow out of it. But a lot of people I know, I had so much FOMO that week, dude. I was not myself. I was so sad seeing everyone have a great time. Like, everyone was like, dude, the nightlife here is so much fun too, because like there's nothing else to do in Mobile, but like everyone comes out to the bar after, like the practices are over. We have a great time. Like, and I'm just like, that sucks. Like, I'm so sad that I wasn't there. Like, one of my guys was like, yo, I met Ian Rappaport. I met all these guys. Like, we had such a great conversation. One guy that I know in one day met Jerry Rice, Randy Moss, and Mike Tomlin all in the same day. And I was just like, dude, like, that is like, why do you have to rub that in? That's so bad.
Well, now you have time to prepare for next year.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm going to get everything in order. I thought, see, like, I had no idea how the credential process like works. So I just applied, like, for shits and giggles, I just applied and forgot about it. And I was just like, yeah, like this isn't going to happen. If I would have known how much earlier the credential process comes out, I would have applied then. You know what I mean? But, you know, this year, now I know for this upcoming year, and you know, it's actually a pretty expensive trip. For the most part, one of the guys that went drove from Dallas to Mobile, which is like an 11-hour drive, which is nuts. And he said he still spent like almost $3,000 in the 4 days that he was there. So, like, it's an expensive trip.
Yeah, I can imagine. There's a lot of people there, and probably not as much hotel space as most cities.
Yeah, but from what I heard, everything like the amenities, like the hotels, everything was awesome. Like, it's so well planned out, and so like everything is thought of. Like, there's not one thing that hasn't been thought of. So I'm looking forward to going. I would love if you could come with me. I think that would be great. I know that you're not really much of a you like the draft, but you're not really a draft guy. But like, I think you should come.
I like the draft. I just have to study. I'd have to study up a little earlier on the prospects, and you know, instead of waiting to, you know, to know beyond the first round.
Yeah. No. It's.
But I mean, I'd like to meet Mike Tomlin, Jerry Rice, and Randy Moss in the same night.
Dude, like when I saw that they were there, because this was the most publicized Senior Bowl like ever.
Mm-hmm.
And this was also the most people that ever showed up to the Senior Bowl like media wise. So they never had of course players come, but like they've never had like Hall of Famers like Randy Moss and Jerry Rice come. Like, now I could only imagine what's going to happen next year, now that it's going to be even more publicized and you got guys like me and you talking about it.
Yeah.
And like, and I'm assuming that they've opened up the media, because now it used to be just Media One. It used to be the only way that you're getting in is if you're associated with an NFL team or like a network or something like that. That was the only way that you were getting in. So a lot less people were going. Now they opened it up to Media One and Media Two. So like, we would fall under Media Two, where it's like, you know, quote unquote evaluators. Like, when they put that on my press credentials, I was like, oh, evaluator. I was like, that's okay.
Well, it's good that they're opening it up more. I mean, that's how, you know, that's how you build the brand, is you have more people cover it.
Yeah,
and I mean, it
was great. Like, I would love to just do like a live something from the Senior Bowl, but yeah, that's how you meet a lot of people. And I was just sitting there like listening to my friend talk, I'm just like, man, I hate you so much right now. But I was so happy for him. But at the same time, I was like, dude, I've got such second. I got so much FOMO in my heart right now. Yeah. But yeah, it was. It's something that you should consider. You got a lot of time to save for it.
That's something that's probably pretty easy for me to you know, get time off or at least arrange.
You could even cover it for the website.
True. Actually, we had somebody there this year. Which was so, and you know, for certain reasons, they'll need somebody else next year.
Okay, well, perfect. There you go.
But you know, even aside from that, if I had to be off, that's what it's the week between. Wait, which week is it? Is it the week between the Super Bowl and the AFC championship?
Let me see. I don't remember correctly. I think it was.
It's one of those down weekends where it's not. You know, there's not really a ton going on. Well,
the beauty of it is that like. What I heard is no one really stays. So the game itself was February 3rd, mm-hmm. but that whole week, Saturday, February 3rd.
Okay. So it's the week after the conference title games.
Yeah. So there's a lull in time mm-hmm. there in terms of like what actually is going on. But from what I understood was a lot of people show up Tuesday and leave on like Friday afternoon or Friday night because not a lot of people stay for the game, especially like media two people, because like, what are you possibly going to cover? Like, right. You know what I mean? There's really not much going on. There's so many different players playing that like you can't even keep up. But that's what I heard is because the practices start Tuesday. Then there's three full days of practices. It's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then like Friday, you could meet some of the guys. Like they come down for like it's almost like a convention. Like you can meet them, ask them questions real quick. Like mm-hmm. I saw one of my buddies that from Jets Twitter, he was there and he did, he interviewed like a minute long. He did a few prospects and stuff. So, and then after that you leave. So like, it's really not a bad, like if you can get that Monday through Friday off.
Yeah.
You know, and like that's really not that bad. I think I'm considering it next year. I already spoke to my boss about it. My boss meaning my fiance, not my and not my actual boss at work. But
you had to pause. You had to pause Camp Rock too.
I mean she I sound like I have emphysema, but it's been standing outside for 70 plus hours the last 3 weeks, but that was funny. Yeah, I know. She was pissed at first. She was like, why'd you pause it? And I'm like, this is amazing. And she's like, oh my God, that's so cool. But yeah, no, that's funny. Pause it. I had to pause Camp Rock. Maybe next year we'll be watching Camp Rock, the original.
You're going to watch it every night until you get the email.
Yeah, right? Know it word for word. But we're big Joe Bros fans. So, you know, that's why we watched it. But that's a conversation for another day, I guess. You didn't really react. You didn't really respond to that one, but.
I'm not going to judge you for that.
You shouldn't, because they're great artists. But all right, so enough of that. The last thing that we really, I guess, wanted to touch upon, Dan's going to have to lead this one because he's much more well-versed in this topic than me. But I want at least a little bit of a college March Madness bracket update. Kind of see what you're feeling like here. Now, I want you to lead into this. I'm going to go use the facilities real quick and I'll be right back. So sure. I'm going to jump right into it when you come back. When I come back.
Yeah. So we are, we're recording this on Sunday, February 25th. So it's exactly 3 weeks from Selection Sunday when the bracket is revealed. So, you know, it's something I pay attention to throughout the season starting in November. And it's something that's starting to gain a little more traction over the, you know, over these coming weeks. We're actually a week and a day out from the first conference tournament beginning. One of the, you know, the first week of conference tournaments are the smaller conferences, but you know, it's a start of something, and the following week is the bigger conferences, and then the bracket comes out on Sunday, March 17th. So, you know, we want to get into a little bit of a bracket preview. I know last year we kind of talked through this around the same time. We talked about what teams to watch, you know, what teams are most vulnerable. And the kind of the prevailing thought a year ago was there is no, you know, there's exceptional parity. Like there's more parity than most years. You know, there's not really any great teams. And, you know, there could be a lot of chaos because of that. And sure enough, there was a lot of chaos. And, you know, the final four was a 4 seed, a 5 seed, a 5 seed, and a 9. I will say, as chaotic as it's been, I don't think we're going to have that this year. I think there are three great teams, you know. All right, you're back. So I'm going to catch you up to speed. Just saying that, you know, in most years, including last year, the kind of the prevailing thought was there are no great teams. You know, there's going to be a lot of chaos. I think there will be chaos, but there are three great teams that are that stand out above the rest, and that's UConn, Houston, and Purdue. And if the season ended today, I'd probably pick Houston as my champion, but UConn could very easily do it. I think, like everybody else, I'm not totally sold on Purdue, but you could say the same thing about Virginia after they lost the 16 seed 6 years ago, and they won the title in 2019. I do think that UConn, Houston, and Purdue are a step above the rest. But there are a lot of good teams this year. I think toward the bubble, you know, the 10-11 seeds, you could argue it's stronger than usual. That there are, you know, a few good teams that aren't going to make it. So I'm curious. I think the way we set this up last year is, you know, I had you ask me some questions because a lot of people who are listening probably feel the same way that you do, where, you know, there's still a lot they want to know.
Yeah.
So if you know, however you want to approach it or ask questions, I'm all for it.
I mean, I just kind of want to know, well, first off, I was so excited. We talked about this last year as a joke, but it was reality for a little while, at least. You know, St. John's in the tournament. I mean, that you had them there. Well, didn't you have them as high as a 7?
Yeah, this year. Yep. They have. Oh,
God, I wish. But now they're completely out of it. But
yeah, like, they've fallen hard. It's not over, but it's not great.
What are some teams that you think are going to be like surprising in their rankings? Like who's a team that you could see as like a 7 or below that could pose a real problem in the tournament?
Yeah, I'd like to think I mentioned FAU last year. I hope I did. If I did, I'll give myself credit for that. They ended up in the Final Four. If not, then, you know, I meant to. I think, you know, some of those Mountain West teams that are lower, you know, San Diego State is going to be a top 4 seed probably. They're very good. I think, like, you know, Boise State is a team that made the tournament the last 2 years, lost pretty handily in the first round. This year, they're beating teams on the road. They're beating them by a lot. They're very, very experienced. I think a Boise State team is the type of team that could win a game or two. Utah State, too, which would probably be a 6 or 7 seed. Utah State is like one of the best stories in the nation because they lost their coach last year, Ryan Odom. He went to VCU. They brought back 0% of their points from last year. Not a single player who scored a point came back. So the new coach, one of the best names in college basketball, Danny Sprinkle, he came in from, I think it was Montana State. He basically built the team from scratch, and they are going to be in comfortably as 6 or 7 seed. So they're going to be a lot of fun. Washington State too, not a 7 seed or below. They're probably 6 or 7 right now. Washington State hasn't been to the tournament since 2008, before Klay Thompson was on the team.
I think you mentioned something like that in a post, right?
Yeah, two days ago they beat number four Arizona on the road. They actually lost to Arizona State yesterday, so, you know, letdown game. But they're a team that's been kind of a long time coming, being put together. They've got their leading scorer is somebody who overcame cancer. Wow. You know, they have a fun story, and I think they'll be an interesting team to watch. Nebraska's fun too. Nebraska is like around a 10 seed right now. They're not a guarantee to be in. They probably will be. They're very funny. They don't really win on the road. They dominate at home. They also have a really good offense. They've got a Japanese player who can't do anything really other than shoot threes, but he shoots threes, you know, like nobody's business.
I love it.
You know, just like dominates from beyond the arc. Keisei Tominaga.
That's a name.
Yeah, that's a name, and he's a lot of fun. So Nebraska's another team. They haven't been to the tournament in a decade. They're coached by Fred Hoiberg, who is the Bulls coach. He was very successful at Iowa State before the Bulls. And it took them a little bit to get that thing turned around, but they're probably going to be in the tournament for the first time in 10 years. Wow. Hopefully.
That's crazy to think that they haven't been in the tournament and they haven't been dancing in 10 years.
And I think an 11 seed back in like 2014, you know, that was it. They didn't win a game. They think they lost to Baylor. But they're probably going to be in. And if you go to some of the mid-majors, the teams that that still probably have to win their conference tournament to get in, but if they do, could be threats. I would look at one Indiana State from the Missouri Valley Conference. They have a guy who, if they make it in, is going to be probably everybody's favorite player because he's like this Nikola Jokic looking type of guy who wears like the specs.
Oh boy,
Robbie Avila. You know, like big dude. He's also averaging like 20 points a game. So yeah, like it's not just that he's big; like he's good.
He's actually good, yeah.
So he would be a lot of fun. USF. USF is leading the AAC, which is FAU's conference. Memphis is in that conference. But USF is 12-1 in the conference. They won't be in on their own because they had a bunch of bad losses at the start of the year in non-conference play. They lost to like Maine and a few others. Those losses are too bad to keep them out for them to get in. But they've really hit their stride. They're also coached by Amir Abdur-Rahim. His brother played in the NBA. He coached Kennesaw State last year, which almost came really, really close to knocking off Xavier in the first round. You know, they'd never been to the tournament before. It was like this amazing job. Well, he took that job, and now he's got them having their best year. I think they haven't been to the tournament in like 15 years.
Wow.
Appalachian State is very good. They've beaten some good teams out of conference. And then Loyola Chicago, you know, with Sister Jean, who's 104 now.
Is she still alive?
She's still alive. She still goes to games, too. They're another team where they had a couple bad losses early in the year, but they're actually tied for the lead in the Atlantic 10, which is Dayton's conference. I just say it like that because Dayton is definitely going to get in.
Yeah.
But, you know, if they win that conference tournament, like they, you know, they've had, it's another team where they had a little bit of a rough start. They've really put it together. They're like, you know, they're beating teams in right now, beating them by a lot. They'd be a contender to win a game in the first round. It's funny, but you know, when you have those small schools that, you know, end up having a ton of success and end up in the Final Four, when the coach leaves, because the coach usually does, and the coach did in this case, Porter Moser went to Oklahoma. It's like, well, you know, you better get the hire right because like you've got to sustain that momentum. They actually hired like a 31-year-old coach, Drew Valentine, who's Denzel Valentine's brother. He used to play for the Bulls. Mm-hmm. He would start Michigan State. His brother, Drew Valentine, became their coach. And then last year they went to the tournament his first year. Last year they really fell off. And the thought was kind of like, well, maybe they didn't get it right hiring such a young coach. And, you know, that's a problem because it's going to be hard to build that thing back up. This year they've built it. They've built the whole thing back up with him. You know, like he's done a great job of turning the whole thing around. They look like they used to. Don't know if it's going to be a tournament team, if it's going to turn into a tournament appearance this year. But if it does, they'd be a lot of fun. So that's kind of an overview of the best of the best, which I think is Houston, UConn, and Purdue. And then some teams to look for. But
now, my final question to you would be kind of sort of like the reverse. Who are some higher seeds, maybe meaning like a five and higher, that are maybe not built for a long term.
Yeah, I think BYU is around a five or six, probably a six now. I think they're out in the first round. They are not. They're like Nebraska. They're really not good on the road. They're very good at home. They beat Baylor at home, but they can't beat anybody on the road. They also live and die by the three, like more than any team. And they happen to go in at home, and they don't really go in on the road. I don't think in the tournament. I have a feeling that they're not going to be able to just survive by shooting threes, you know, especially without their home environment.
Mm-hmm.
I think BYU is a team that's probably going to fall out early. I love the Mountain West Conference, but Colorado State is very top heavy with Isaiah Stevens is one of the best point guards in the country. After that, they kind of drop off. They haven't, unlike most teams, most of the top teams in the conference, they haven't really been able to do anything on the road. I don't really see Colorado State as a team winning a game. You know, outside of that, Wisconsin's not a team. I feel like every year they're like, you know, in the 5 seed range and then they just lose earlier than they should. Like they were a 3 seed 2 years ago and they, you know, in the second round they lost to like number 11 Iowa State and it was kind of like, yeah, that's expected. I wouldn't be surprised if the same thing happened this year. They were very high for a while, 2 or 3. They've lost a bunch of games. They're in the 5 range now. I would not be shocked if they were a team that got knocked out early. They just kind of, they're kind of like Virginia. They play like, you know, a slower, you know, they have a slower offense that where if they fall behind, it's kind of harder for them to catch up. Offense is better than it has been in past years when it was really sluggish, but they're one of those teams you can look at where it's like, you know, even if they win the first round, they might be like a guaranteed loss in like a 4-5 matchup in the next round, whether they're the 4 or the 5.
All right, last question I have for you. Pretty generic. Right now, with not everything, you know, settled, who would be your favorite right now?
I would go with Houston. Houston is, I mean, UConn's just as good, but Houston always has a great defense, extremely well coached. This year, they actually have a lot of offense. Jamal Shedd is one of the best guards in the country. LJ Cryer is a great shooter. He came from Baylor, so he's got a lot of experience in big games. You know, they're great defensively. They finally have an offense. They've also been really well battle tested. I think in past years it has not helped them that they played in a weaker mm-hmm. conference. They really weren't that tested. This year they're in the Big 12. Yes, just yesterday, like they blew a 17-point lead against Baylor, and then they still won. And, like, those are the games where some people may see it as a red flag. And I'm like, no, it's good that they won that. Because usually, if the first time they experience one of those games is in the tournament, they're going to lose.
Yeah.
But the fact that they're getting through those now and they're winning those games, and it was on the road, too, which is very hard, you know, that's a great sign for me. So I think they're finally battle-tested enough. They finally have enough offense. They've been to the Final Four. They've been to the Elite Eight. I think they can win 2 more games this year. You know, if they avoid serious injuries, which is always a caveat. But that they would be a team that I'm looking to probably pick. You know, I'm not locking anything in now, but that would probably be my pick.
Okay.
Is Houston.
All right. Well, St. John's is going to be my pick to win the whole thing.
At least it's more realistic than last year.
Yeah.
Creighton today. That would be a nice win.
I mean, like, did they even make the NIT last year or
I don't think so.
I don't think they've been in a tournament in like I don't know, years probably.
I saw them play at the Big East tournament at MSG last year. They put up a fight. They went to overtime actually against Marquette, but they didn't win. It really wouldn't have mattered if they won anyway, unless they won the next two, which would not have happened. They wouldn't have beaten UConn.
That's a terrible thing to say. You never know. See, like, we would never know if, you know, UConn won last year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we would never know if UConn won if they had to go up against those Johnnies. So.
Yeah, well they did lose that game anyway, UConn. They just ended up losing it to Marquette. So maybe everything would have stayed the same. Who knows? But
who knows? But, no, that's good. I'm glad that we got a little taste. I'm assuming that now that we kind of got the ball rolling on March Madness and upcoming episodes, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more about it, give a little bit more of an update, because it is exciting. Bracket time is always exciting I would like to say, I hate saying the term casual, but I guess for me in this sense, I would say I'm a casual college basketball fan.
That's how most people who watch in March are. It doesn't matter. You know, at that point, it doesn't matter how long you've paid attention. It's fun for everybody.
It is. It really is.
As long as you fill out a bracket, you're good.
It's so exciting. So I always fill out the most ridiculous bracket ever because, you know, there's no path to victory with a bracket because no one's ever had a perfect bracket. So you can't even say, like, if you look at my bracket and I have a 16 seed winning the championship, you can't say that that's ridiculous because you've never had a perfect bracket. So, you know what I mean?
I always do a coin flip bracket the night before.
Oh, I like that idea.
You know, so just to flip a coin, see how that turns out. Luckily, it's never beaten my actual bracket. The year when I you know retire from this all will be when my coin flip bracket beats my actual bracket.
What was like the most accurate bracket that you've had?
I picked the winner when I was 12. If that counts. No, honestly, it was probably like last year, but it wasn't even the best last year. Like I don't even think I had a Final Four team, but I was in it. Maybe it didn't turn out better than most brackets, you know, best out of all brackets, but I was in it longer. So last year, after the first day of the Sweet 16, I was really in it. Like I was like fifth in like a group I was in with like 111 people.
Nice.
And I had like, you know, I don't know, two or three of my Final Four teams still going. It was like, you know, the Sweet 16 is like a Thursday night and a Friday night. So like that Friday, I was like, all right, like I'm starting to think about my chances here. Like, you know, like I might actually have a shot, you know, at least in that group. Because the night before I had that Gonzaga UConn matchup. So, you know, when they both moved on, I was like, this is great. You know, and then hopefully, you know, I think I had Gonzaga winning that one. So it didn't end up working out. But at the time I was like, this is great. My champion was still in because I had Alabama. I had Xavier in the Elite Eight. That was still possible because they played on Friday night. Friday night ruined the whole thing. Like Xavier lost, Alabama lost. There was probably somebody else I had that lost. The whole thing just got destroyed, blown up. So, but for that day, I was like, hey, like I'm usually not still paying attention to my bracket at this point. Like I'm doing pretty solid here.
I think it was 2 years ago. My bracket was toast after the first game.
Yeah.
Like,
well, yeah. I mean that happens. Like I remember the year. I think I had Michigan State winning it all, maybe. No, maybe not winning it all. I had them in the championship game in the year they lost to Middle Tennessee, the 15 seed. And now I was like, okay, like that's it. You know, like unless, you know, whoever my champion is, even if my champion gets there, I don't remember who it was, I'm probably not winning. So
my claim to fame will always be, what was that team that beat Virginia H whatever?
UMBC.
UMBC. I had just because it was just for shits and giggles. I had them beating them, and I was like one of the only people in my group that it was like me and like two other guys that had it. And obviously, the bracket got absolutely destroyed.
Well, that year, I thought I outsmarted everybody because I filled out my bracket and I had Arizona in the Final Four. And then I was like, you know what? I just don't trust them. Like, I'm pulling them back, having them lose in the Sweet 16 or whatever it is. DeAndre Ayton was the star of Arizona that year. So the first night they get crushed by Buffalo, the 13 seed. I was like, got it. Like, you know, if I had Arizona in the Final Four, I'd be devastated. But I pulled them out of that. But who did I have going to the Final Four instead? Virginia. Next night, Virginia loses. I was like, I guess there's no winning there. But I no longer feel as smart as I did. It ended up being, I think that was Loyola Chicago's region where they went to the Final Four, so at least nobody had that. But
that's so crazy. I still can't believe that happened. But shout out Florida Gulf Coast University, Lob City.
I think I had Georgetown. That's the year I was 12 years old, and I had Louisville. I had Louisville win the whole thing. That was the first time I ever filled out a bracket.
You were probably like, "Oh, this shit is easy."
Yeah, but except I had Georgetown in the Final Four. I'm pretty sure, and they lost to FGCU, to Florida Gulf Coast.
Oh man, well, I'm glad that we started this talk. It's always fun for casuals like myself, and I'm sure a lot of other people listening are more the casual college basketball fan. But I think that's a good place to wrap on this episode. This was very productive. We didn't go too off course that many times, no. Dan. I think we
talked before this and we're like, yeah, we don't need to get into the draft now. And, you know, sure enough, we like broke down the whole draft.
Yeah.
You might have invited me.
264 picks. And, no, yeah, that's a good place to end episode number 56 of the ASN podcast. Dan, do you have off next week? Because I do. So maybe we could actually squeeze out an episode a week after one.
When are you off? The whole week?
Let's not get crazy.
Yeah, I was going to say, that seems like you would have bragged about that already.
Let's not get nuts. No, Saturday and Sunday I'm off next week. So.
Saturday and Sunday. Yeah, I'm gonna be home in New York. So let me see. What you think in the morning?
Yeah, I'm always.
I think Saturday I don't work till a little bit later on.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
Potentially. So I have to check on that because I'll be home.
When the next episode comes out in 7 weeks, we're going to come back to this episode and we're going to say, yeah, here we go. All right. But
I think we could do it. I think we could pull it off. If not, actually, I am off Sunday. So if not Saturday, early Sunday.
Hey-o. There we go.
So there we go. I think we're in a good spot. Ladies and gentlemen,
we are back. We are so back, just like the New York Knicks. All right. That would have been great to go into another segment, but I got nothing.
Well, that's next week. We save it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's still a little bit of a dead time. We're going to need something to talk about unless Justin Fields gets traded or something along those lines.
Oh, boy. Cliffhangers. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you in the next one.